Hello and welcome to the Geek and Review Podcast. I'm Jeremy Pappas, alongside, as always, in this corner, in the purple trunks, weighing 135 pounds, is Russell Jones. Russell.
100. What?
I just made up a number.
What?
I just made up a number.
You did get the purple trunks right, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I figured
it
you,
is. I mean, it's game day in Louisiana.
You and
what
the
other color am I going to wear?
You and the Hulk, right?
Well, yeah, that's true.
You
I am
should
on the
take
Bruce
the
Banner side of things.
If you're wearing purple shorts, you should tatter the bottom of them. That way, see, if I were in Louisiana and I had to wear purple, which you do, I would definitely tatter the bottom of all my shorts.
Yep.
And walk around without a shirt on.
Yep.
Like, actually, I'd stagger around without a shirt on. Like, I just transformed back from the Hulk.
Yep.
What's going on, man?
Oh, like I said, it's game day in Baton Rouge, so that means, you know, batten down the hatches, get your shopping done early, and pray that the sounds from Death Valley don't completely just, you know, knock down the levees.
Eh, well, we can always hope that's not the case.
Yeah,
it's a good weekend. We do the boxing announcement because we have some controversial stuff to talk about on the podcast today. There are, obviously, as anyone who is a frequent listener to the podcast knows, we will be discussing more DC issues, this time outside of the movie theater and in your internets. There's a new trailer for a movie that, I know Russell and I both have been really super looking forward to, by the name of RoboCop.
Yes, indeedy.
RoboCop. Huge fan of RoboCop. I enjoyed all of the RoboCop films when I was a lad, as anyone almost 30 would say. That was one of those things. It was... back when we were growing up, and you can agree or disagree, if you were a boy, and many girls I know too, there were three things that you liked, regardless, with very few exceptions. You liked either He-Man or the Thundercats. You got to choose. Or both, but you got to choose. Sometimes people would be He-Man and not Thundercats. Sometimes people would be Thundercats and not He-Man. Usually it was both. I was also both, though I really liked the Thundercats. You also liked the Ninja Turtles. Required, though everyone likes the Ninja Turtles. And you also liked the RoboCop films, which you probably saw far earlier than you should have.
Yeah.
The RoboCop films were a staple on cable. When cable started to get real big, you would get a lot of RoboCop movie marathons, and you still find them occasionally. Well, they're rebooting it. I'm going to link the trailer in the podcast page. I don't want to go over the trailer scene by scene because it's 2 minutes and 20 seconds long. You should just go watch it. I do want to talk. So here, let's go first impressions RoboCop trailer, Russell.
I enjoyed it. I had been kind of, you know, not really interested. My hypometer was in kind of neutral. After seeing this, I'm cautiously interested. It was a good trailer. I think that it's a solid. I think that the stuff and the decisions made and the people involved for sure are very solid. I mean, you've got Gary Oldman, Michael Keaton, Samuel L. Jackson. You know, I'm really interested. I'm really interested.
The casting looks great.
Yeah,
could absolutely not be. No, you couldn't ask for a better cast.
Yeah.
I have a couple of problems with the trailer. I am, while Russell is hesitantly hesitant optimist, I am a slightly hesitant pessimist. Here are the issues with just the trailer, as far as I can see. And then Russell can disagree, which he undoubtedly will do, which is the beauty of the podcast. The beginning of it, I'm digging. I'm looking through the beginning of it going, okay, this is groovy. I'm liking what's going on here. It looks good. Then we start getting into stuff. And Michael Keaton's character, who's clearly playing evil Steve Jobs, basically, is saying we need to give people someone they can rally around. And then you see Alex Murphy, his car blows up, and he's all fucked up. That's par for the course. So they turn Alex Murphy with the the blessing of his wife, they turn him into RoboCop. There are changes with RoboCop color scheme that people are going to bitch about. I will not. I couldn't honestly care less. His face mask does look a little bit like a Cylon slash Kit from Knight Rider.
It was very Tron-ish.
But I didn't expect them to come back with the absolute, you know, this is exactly what RoboCop looks like, because we're not going to change a thing about him. I think you have to with someone like RoboCop. Though they do show him in the original RoboCop look. I mean, you see a lot of regular original RoboCop, which was weird to see in a modern film.
I think you're going to see, you know, there's the scene in there where he's discussing and it's like, let's make it more tactical. Right. I think what they're doing is the earlier, you know, versions of him in the suit or him in the frame, you know, whatever they're going to call it. Mm-hmm. The earlier versions are basically similar to the old RoboCop. I mean, you see the silver helmet come down. It looks a lot like it. Right. But when they're ready to, you know, debut, quote unquote, they tactical him up, and that's going to be his kind of look for the rest of the movie. So I do agree with you. I think we're going to see quite a bit of, you know, Chrome Dome RoboCop, essentially, before you switch to the, you know, very glossy black.
Yeah, the tactical look, as they call it.
Which I think, honestly, I mean, that's one of the changes that I have absolutely no problem with, because let's be honest, as we're getting closer, as we're getting away from the, you know, the semi-ridiculous sci-fi that we had in the 80s, you know, the really kind of out there stuff, and we're getting more into, we like our speculative fiction to still be at least a bit specific.
See, but do we like that?
I think that some people do.
That's judging by the reception of the Batman Nolan trilogy films. Some people do. I tend to think they go a little overboard with realism, hence the Batman Nolan trilogy films. Yeah. But I have no complaints about the suit. I think the suit looks pretty good. There are a couple of moments in the trailer that give me pause, just because the CG doesn't look real great. It looks like something that I could expect to see on like a bigger budget network television show, like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Under the Dome, some of the larger, you know, more sweeping, what's the one where the power goes out? Revolution,
yeah.
It looks like something I would, a couple times, now again, this is a trailer, so I don't want to put, you know, bad stuff on a movie that has not come out yet, but being the trailer...
It'd have a $100 million budget.
Right. Some of the CG does not look good. It just doesn't. It looks like there's a clip near the end of the trailer that really sticks out to me as looking like something I could see on primetime network TV, and I wouldn't be like, oh my god, I can't believe that's on TV. So there's that. The premise behind the story, that we've seen is looking to give somebody, and Michael Keaton's character, Evil Steve Jobs, says, we're looking to give somebody something to rally behind. And then they create the RoboCop, which requires a person inside. Well, then they're astounded when the person inside, because they go very specific in saying, there will be a guy inside, and he thinks he has the illusion of free will, but we're really controlling everything he does. Which leads me to my overall point, which they may explain in the movie, then why do you need a person inside?
Yeah.
Why isn't it just a robot?
Yeah.
Now, you could say, well, they need to use the brain to do blah, blah, blah. Do they, though?
Yeah.
Because, well, or if that's the case, couldn't you just use a brain? Surely you don't need the body if you can make things out of metal that people are going to shoot at.
Well, like we've said up until now, you know, they're – well, let me back up. Mm. Reading the IMDb synopsis, they've mentioned that Omnicorp is, you know, the biggest producer of drones. The military has been using drones overseas for years. Uh-huh. They want to bring that technology home. What's one of the biggest, you know, concerns that some people have about using drones?
There's no human in charge.
There isn't a human element. So now they're saying we put the human element inside the machine so that we have essentially a drone that mimics a human, or at least has enough of those human components,
but we still maintain... I get you. The human portion inside the machine will allow us to say, oh, the RoboCop is in control. He's a person. You can trust RoboCop because they're more likely to trust a person than...
On the back end.
Right. That, I think, makes sense. I think, is the way they will likely do it. Yes. I don't... Also, it's still kind of... I think it could be done a little different, but...
Yeah. Remember back when we were first getting the concepts of the suit, and they had mentioned, I think offhand somewhere, that one of the selling points was the fact that they wanted to keep him, one of his hands, to still be a flesh and blood hand so that he could shake people's hands, and that was going to be a humanizing. And after seeing this trailer, I can absolutely see Michael Keaton's evil Steve Jobs, which is a fantastic description. I can absolutely see him saying that and pulling it off. Like, no, we need to keep the humanizing element. Let him keep his hand. Right. The rest of it, get rid of it.
We need to get rid of as much of the human as we can so we can control it, but leave in enough of the human that it won't put people off.
Yeah. It's putting a person inside a drone. And that's the whole kind of big whatever, you know, if you want to tie it into modern day, to current events and topics, it's the whole drone warfare, you know. And remember the original RoboCop. They had built an all-robot thing, and I cannot remember the designation for it, but it was the big kind of – it looked like a half-transformed transformer with a
–
The big rounded thing, and then it, like, hosed an entire boardroom of people when it was demonstrating it because there were glitches in the machine.
Right.
So that and then they, you know, kept RoboCop around because guy in the machine. Anyway, I think that, again, this is a trailer. Uh-huh. And I agree that plot point is one that they're going to have to be very careful with and they're going to have to nail to, you know, to demonstrate, okay, this is why we need a person inside the machine. It gets too close to explainy. Uh-huh. They're going to have to demonstrate it and show that it's important for this to happen so that the audience falls along with it. Otherwise, it's just a gimmick. And in a trailer, you don't have that kind of time.
Uh-huh. I do have some other issues with the thing, and I want to get to one specific. I'm saving it for last. The one thing that is important to really look at with RoboCop, the original movie, is that it was very thematic. It was very allegorical. It was directed by a guy named Paul Verhoeven. And yeah. Verhoeven is a very allegorical director. He likes to use a lot of religious symbolism. He likes to use, you know, a lot of stuff like that. And you see a lot of that in the original RoboCop film. It also explores the original film explores a lot more than just that sort of thing. It also has a lot to do with sort of crass commercialism and you know corporate interests over individual interests, etc. I don't see, from what I've seen in the trailer, I don't see anything like that in the movie.
I would be really surprised.
Not a bit if we saw any of that. Because RoboCop, the original movie, has a social commentary. This is, for lack of a better term, dumbed down from that. Now, true, RoboCop, the original movie, was not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it attempted, it went there, and the allegories are pretty good. Paul Verhoeven is a good director.
Yeah.
So I'm a little let down by the fact that there's not going to be any of that in there. It's going to be an action movie, and we sort of understand what's going to happen. I mean, we know what's going to happen in the movie. It's not – there's going to be very few surprises just based on the trailer, unless the trailer doesn't represent the movie very well, which is quite possible. Yeah. You pretty much know what's going to happen. They give it away.
Yeah.
In the original RoboCop, there was some differences. So that I'm like, a little kind of meh about.
One thing that I took away was that it's interesting that Murphy is aware
of himself as Murphy from the very get-go.
Right,
as opposed
which you didn't
to,
get with the original RoboCop movie.
No, you did not. It was kind of a buried, it was a buried emotional.
Which I think worked so well, bringing forward those themes of, you know, who am I? Am I a man or am I a machine? What does this do to my family? What is this? I mean, his family is, again from the trailer, while not complicit, but agreeable to the change. Now, I'm sure they tell her now, if we do this, you can't see him again. He'll be blah, 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 but he will be alive. Yada, yada. I understand that, and that could work, and yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, he's aware, he is RoboCop. I mean, he is guy in a machine, as opposed to when you got the very, at the beginning of RoboCop, RoboCop is just a tin can. He's just a machine.
Yes.
And that human spirit, it through sheer force of will, takes over, unbeknownst to everybody.
It kind of awakens.
Which I think is important. Yeah, you see the flashes of his wife, and he starts having those flashbacks. And if it's been a long time since I've seen RoboCop, but I've seen it so many times that...
Right. But, like, you start, you know, it's kind of the difference in... You start at one end of the spectrum... In the original RoboCop, you start at one end of the spectrum, the human. Then he goes to the opposite end of the spectrum, becomes the machine. And then he has to kind of fight his way back to some kind of middle ground at the end.
Right.
This, it just... It starts to seem to be this kind of devolving.
He starts halfway to the finish line.
Essentially, yeah. He's human, then he's part man and machine, but he's still aware that he's a man.
Compare this
starts...
to the Terminator. RoboCop, the original movie, is a lot like the Terminator. When you get the original, when you get the Terminator, he shows up and he's slow, especially you see in Judgment Day, he becomes Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, the T-9000. Or I'm sorry, the T-900, not the T-9000. That would just be nine T-1000s. The T-900, he starts out as the bad guy in the original Terminator movie, but you see him, the arc of two movies, become a human, essentially. Not as much in the first movie, but in T-2, you see him go from being, and, you know, the kid tells him you can't kill people, so he shoots people in the leg, and he's still struggling with this, and he is fully robotic, but you see that humanizing. That's what you always got with RoboCop. That's not what you're going to get here. You're going to get Family Man Cop is blown up, is put into the tin can suit. There's a scene where he does some stuff that he would rather not do. His spirit starts to fight back, and then he's able to use the weapons that the bad guys, who we'll find out are, of course, bad guys, have given him to bring down the bad guys. That's going to be the movie, which is fine. Gonna be cool. I'm likely gonna go see it in the theater unless I get a trailer that's just really terrible. Based on this trailer, I will go and see it in the theater. One thing that is important, I because we discussed the making it the gritty realism and yada yada yada. One thing I think is important to throw it out is at the very, 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 very end of the trailer, RoboCop speaks.
Yeah.
RoboCop has an annoying voice. It's a weird mechanical tinny voice. Why the hell do we have to go through the Nolan Batman voice with RoboCop? Have filmmakers Have they not learned? We do not want the main character of a movie to have an annoying voice.
Because when he's talking like this, it really takes you out of the movie.
Well, let's lance this. What's the one thing that they learned the most from? Bottom lines. And were those bottom lines terrible for those movies?
No.
So that means that they learned nothing.
That is true. That is absolutely true. It just you'd figure you'd want to do a good film. I mean, you still want to do good films. We still get good films. It just, it's a little sad to see what could have, I mean, because a RoboCop reboot is super timely right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is. I am not completely lost on the movie, though it had a $100 million budget. The original RoboCop's budget was $13 million.
Mm-hmm. It's inflation.
Pretty big difference. For you.
Yeah.
Pretty big difference.
So, 87 to 2012.
Right. What's the inflation?
Right, something like that. Not to mention just the overall, you know, cost of making a movie in general.
Right. Well, has it gone up all that much?
Eh.
I don't know. Let's see. I'm looking up the inflation right now.
I will say this in the meantime.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that in Hungary, RoboCop was known as Robot Zaru?
Robot Zaru?
In India, the Hindi title for the dubbed version, Electronica Yasusa. And in Poland, Super Glina.
Super Glina.
Now that might be there's an Italian consonant y, which is G L I, and that's got, you know, G L I in the middle of it, so it might be Super Glina or something like that, or it might be some other Polish Cyrillic, maybe. I don't know, that I have absolutely no idea how to pronounce. So there's probably Poles or listeners going, dude, that's not cool. What are you doing? Stop butchering that. Quit while you're ahead. Were we ever really ahead?
Russell never quits while he's ahead.
No, if there's a hole, I'm going to dig and dig until I get to China.
Inflation from 1987 until now is roughly double. So 13 million in 89, in 87 would have been about 26 million. The box office of the original RoboCop was 53 million, meaning 106-ish million. Made, which is, considering what they spent for it, pretty good. So, you know, it is. I urge you to go watch the trailer, to watch it with a completely open mind, and if you come to the same conclusions that I do or that Russell does, again, I'm not completely down on this movie. I'm a little the thing that concerns me the most is the CG. And the voice. The CG does not look great. And in 2013, your CG has to be spot on always. It's another reason that the Michael Baying of movies has had a negative impact on movies as a whole. Because you can't overlook lower budget CG. Because you have filmmakers that are making terrible movies with crazy budgets. So they have the money to hire the nerds to make everything look really, 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 really super good.
Yeah.
When you get a movie that you're not going to spend all that much money on, but you want to make a really good movie, if the CG's off, man, you and it's not just because I can't stand poor CG either. Because I look over across the theater at fucking Terminator 4, The Light Side of the Sun, and the CG is incredible. It's a fucking terrible movie. You can't really tell what's going on half the time. It looks like somebody threw a fucking washing machine down a spiral staircase. But when the Transformers are standing still, they look pretty fucking realistic.
Yeah.
I'm not an eye candy movie guy, but I can't deny. It'd be like eating a meal and the meal is made with horribly inferior ingredients, but they're put together with such art. Whereas a McDonald's hamburger is made with you know, better ingredients, but it's put together like shit.
Now, this is due out February 7th, so is still time that they could potentially clean some of that.
That's true, though. A February release date. February release dates are really, really bad. It's the post-Christmas movie season. They don't want to... It's when you get a studio and the studio sort of goes, don't think this is going to do so well. We don't want it to compete against anybody.
Throw it February.
Yeah. So throw it in February.
I'm hopeful. I remain
hopeful. I'll go see it unless the very next trailer that we get is just off the rails, or I can't find somebody to go with me. To watch because it's not a movie I'm going to go watch by myself in the theater. I'm not that committed. I will definitely take a look at it. I'm interested. I'm a big RoboCop fan, so that's what I would like to see.
Yep.
So that wasn't as controversial as I had led everybody to believe. Now we're going to talk about DC. Now, as you know, Russell and I think everything DC does turns to gold. DC, everything they're like reverse Midas. Everything they do turns to shit, which is cool. So, yeah, here's what's going on with DC. Well, we'll start. There are two issues that came out that came out very recently. One is concerning the authors of Batwoman. Batwoman has been in the news lately because Batwoman is a lesbian. And Batwoman has a lesbian partner, a girlfriend. I hate to say girlfriend, but a girlfriend, for lack of a better term. Which was seen as a real step forward in, gay rights in comics and etc. Well, all of the Batwoman authors have now left the comic, citing creative differences. One of which being the DC top brass not allowing them to show because Kathy Kane, aka Batwoman, she was going to propose. Well, yeah, she was proposing to her girlfriend Maggie, and then they were going to get married. They were engaged. They were going to get married. That happened. So we get into all that. All of the Batwoman people leave, and they say they're leaving because of top brass coming in at the very last minute and changing things, putting creative differences, essentially. One of the things they say they wanted to do was have the wedding, and the DC top brass said you can't have the wedding. Now, the way this has been, because both of these stories that we're about to go through, there is a nugget of truth to the news, but there's more to the story that's important to know that doesn't necessarily make it okay, but it makes it more understandable. Because what we're hearing now, what you're getting on Twitter, your 140 characters of news, is DC tells Batwoman writers no gay marriages in DC Comics. So the Batwoman writers storm out. What you're getting is this Norma Rae moment where everyone stands up and goes, if you're not gonna support gay marriage and you're not gonna support gay relationships, then then take your job and shove it. And then there's the Snidely Whiplash mustache twirling guy going, no, the gays will never, they will never get forward in DC Comics. That's not the case. And it's important for both sides, that's not the case. Now.
Yeah. J.H. William III is one of the writers that left. The other one is W.H. Blackman. Their chief thing that they listed editorial differences, mm-hmm. and on his blog, Williams said that it wasn't, the wedding alone. They also had them alter or completely discard many longstanding storylines in ways that we feel compromise the character and the series. Right. They were told to ditch plans for Killer Croc's origins, drastically alter the original ending of the current arc, and prohibited Kate and her girlfriend Maggie from ever getting married. And then he took to Twitter later to explicitly state, this is J.H. Williams saying, not wanting to be inflammatory, only factual, we fought to get them engaged, but were told emphatically that no marriage can result.
Right.
Now, it's important to note, and has been noted in a couple places like Geekosystem and a few others that I've read, that comics in general don't like weddings.
Right.
They don't like weddings at all. And that's one of the reasons Gwen Stacy was killed off.
Not only do they not like weddings, they don't like people being married.
They don't like people being married. So whether it's
– and this is comics as a whole. This isn't a DC thing. And there are reasons behind that. You get two characters being married. Let me put it as delicately as someone who's not married can put it. For a superhero, being married is kind of boring. It's much better to have, love triangles and yada, 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 yada.
Which is
just good storylining.
Yeah, which is a story is more compelling.
Exactly. It's more compelling. It'd be like saying if someone wanted Batman to open a dry cleaner. Well, we don't want Batman to open a dry cleaner because that would be boring. Whereas you're not going to have people saying that DC is anti-dry cleaners. Not quite to that extent, but that's sort of the case. Batman's not. And marriages usually will dissolve, usually with the other partner being killed. This has also been and this might get me in a lot of trouble, but I'm going to say it anyway. I can understand in comics the reticence, it's not a good thing, but the reticence of wanting to sort of downplay anything that has to do with social issues. Any sort of gay, lesbian, right issues, any sort of, we'll go as far as abortion, we'll go, any sort of social issues. I can understand the reason for wanting to avoid those issues. The reasons are twofold. One, it's a comic book. Most people don't read comic books for political commentary unless you read Vertigo, and then that's the only reason you read comic books. And you're kind of an insufferable douchebag. I'm kidding. I love Vertigo comics. I can understand wanting to avoid those because let's take it down this way. Originally, they say we want Batwoman to be a lesbian. DC Comics to 2013 say, okay. Then they say we want Batwoman to have a girlfriend. DC Comics 2013 goes, okay. They say we want Batwoman to get engaged with her girlfriend. They go, okay. Then they say we want her to get married. No marriage.
Well, that's
where, and the reason being is, and that which is pretty much what he's saying. I'm just illustrating it with errs.
Saying they had to fight to get the engagement, and when they were fighting, they were told emphatically the marriage isn't going to happen. And right,
for those reasons. Now, the reason that I can see DC wanting to avoid this sort of thing is because we've got Kathy Kane and we've got Captain Maggie Sawyer. Let's go into an alternate reality where they get married. There's no problem, right? Kathy Kane, Maggie Sawyer, they get married. They're married. They're married for an arc. The next arc, Maggie Sawyer dies. What's the headline then? DC kills off first lesbian marriage. Getting in any of these issues that as a comic book you get into is going to be bad press, because comics are always tragic. Always. At a certain point, there's not a happy ending. Batwoman's not going to end with a big picture of them holding hands and waving. Now, again, I think it's important to take steps forward. I think it's important for yada yada, but if we're talking bottom line, like we were a RoboCop movie, then I can understand the reticence to do it and not necessarily being anti-gay. That being said, probably not the best move on DC's part. I think they probably should have worked with the Batwoman folks. And I'm sure and from what J.H. Williams III has said, I don't think they intended on this being this big thing that's blown up in DC's face.
But, you know, at the same time, it could be. I mean, that could be the motives behind it. We just don't
know. That's
true. Because we weren't in the middle of these conversations that were going on. But we do know that they were big enough that the writers just decided enough was enough, and they left. Right.
And honestly, creative differences, if you're a creative, and I am a creative differences, especially when you're dealing with people, and I'm not going to get too much into work here, especially when you're dealing with people whose job is not your job, and you think, well, my job is to be creative and your job is to write checks and make sure that all the lights stay on. Why are you making creative decisions? And your management types like to do stuff like that because it's quote unquote fun to sit in a room and say, oh, I think this should happen. And then some smart guy with a pencil makes it happen. That's a power that a lot of management types will wield because to them it's fun. It drives people like me fucking insane because I want to do something good instead of something that somebody with a bigger paycheck tells me is good. Now, I'm not going to get into this issue any more than I already have. But I can understand them wanting to say, you know what, if we can't do our Killer Croc storyline that we've probably been planning for 6 months, and I've got my cell phone, because when you're creative, you get fucking wrapped into your own ideas, and it just overtakes your life. And you want to do stuff, and you really think about it constantly, and you get sucked into your own ideas, and you work with other people, and you get excited, and then along comes somebody whose opinion on creative things you do not respect, but who is your boss, that says, I have a good idea, how about you do what I want you to do, that I just thought up right now, I'm not going to take any more time to think about it, I just want you to do it. That really sucks, and I can understand them wanting to leave because of that.
here are some of the issues that I have coming out of this. I agree with the thought that, well, if they get married, then sooner or later that she's going to die off, because that seems to be the inevitable thing that happens.
Right.
Which is the whole problem with refrigerating a character, you know, female characters in the first place, is completely, like, killing off, depowering, dealing with a female character just to advance primarily the arc of a male character. But it doesn't make it okay if you're doing it to advance the story of a female character, or not, or, you know, punish them for something that they did in the comics in the case of some depowering or other things. It's just, do you have to every time know that, you know, the other person, something bad is going to happen to them? There are other ways to write a story and make it compelling other than going after the love interest or the, you know, the significant other. I mean, the whole reason Batman wears a cowl is so his loved ones won't get hurt. Man, right. The whole reason and they still do. And, you know, love interests that show up, whether they get married or not, they're in the same peril that they are just because they're interested, just because they're involved, because they're connected to the person.
Absolutely.
It's like D&D characters who come in and are
have a loving amnesiac
orphans,
right?
Who are just misanthropes that have no other friends.
Line. It's a good, powerful storyline to go to, and it's hard not to go to that well.
But yeah, but it's also not the only one.
It's not, yes, but it's likely the most powerful, which is why I understand. I don't necessarily understand. Oh, I don't think it's okay to do a lot of things that are done in comics and have been in the past done with comics. I think comics are a lot more cognizant of the things that they do now. I also like giving creative types the freedom to do what they want to do. And sometimes that's going to include, things, you know, like putting a loved one in danger. You see that a lot in superhero movies. It happens to Spider-Man. How many times is Aunt May put in danger? It happens to Batman. How many times, I mean, they've done things to Robin and to Batgirl and to Commissioner Gordon, and pretty much everybody that he likes is going to be, because it's good motivation for the character. I'm very much a proponent of free speech. I think as a writer, as a creative person, you should be able to do what you feel, and these are talented writers, what you feel you should do. Now, is it a good thing that the trope is the wife in the refrigerator, and the best way to get after a male character is to kill his woman, because then he'll be really pissed off and come after you? No, it's not. That is a terrible thing even to think. That's occasionally going to happen, yes, but it should not be the only thing that comics do. At one point in time, that was the only thing comics did. It was going back to those super huge air quotes, traditional gender norms, so the person behind the book could, huge air quotes again, relate to what it is. Real life is much more nuanced than superhero life. So I agree with you that that's definitely not something that would happen. I would say this in response to the whole concept of them getting married and something bad happening and becoming essentially a golden character that you can't touch, is that every character in every superhero comic dies at some point in time. Bad things happen to all of them. So male, female, black, white, Hispanic, gay, straight, alien, not alien, Earth 1, Earth 2, bad things happen to all comic characters. So, you know, DC made a poor choice. I think it has to rest solely on their management for not supporting their creative talent. Regardless what that support means, I think they should have supported their creative talent. And if the creative talent took the book in a direction that the book shouldn't have gone for financial/reader interest reasons, then they should have tried to make changes instead of making changes along the way. Then you get situations like this, where you don't want to do something that a lot of people are really passionate about doing. You want to do it for reasons you think are good. People that are passionate about it don't give a shit, and you look like complete assholes. So at the end of the day, it's DC's fault. It's not their author's fault.
Agreed.
All right. So that is very similar, actually, to the second thing we're going to talk about. It's almost the exact same thing, actually.
Did you know that there's actually a website out there that keeps track of, you know, it has been X number of days since DC did something horribly stupid?
Yes.
That and it's website currently, it's like, sees... it's like stuck at zero.
Yeah, that website always says zero. Then after we get that, and this has been a black eye on DC, and again, I blame it on DC for the reasons I just outlined in an impassioned, breathless speech. I blame it on DC, and it is their fault. It's not the writer's fault. The writers were charged to write and be creative and create a good story. That's what they tried to do. If some asshole is in their way and they decide they can't do it, they leave. Their reasons are justified. They wanted to have a lesbian wedding, and DC didn't want them to have a lesbian wedding, among a ton of other things. The reasons were justified. It's DC's fault for not supporting their creative talent in whatever their creative talent wants to do. Not whatever... to an extent, what their creative talent wants to do. Because it sounds like their creative talent was being micromanaged to death. Which is a terrible thing to have happen. Now, then on the heels of this, on the heels of DC's current black eye, which came right after the Ben Affleck stuff, and then then the Lex Luthor is, oh wait, no, he's not stuff.
No, he's not. Yeah. I mean, come on. Has it been this short a time since Batfleck already?
2 weeks since Batfleck. Yeah, it's nuts. Then they turn around and it starts going around Twitter that DC is asking potential artists to draw a comic book, I would say Super Maven. Everybody loves Harley Quinn now. She has become one of the more cherished and beloved DC Comics characters, period. It comes out that DC Comics is asking their artists to draw her naked in a bathtub about to commit suicide as a way to get their foot in the door with DC Comics. Now, again, that's the snidely whiplash mustache twirling version. Ooh, you want to draw Harley Quinn, huh? How about you draw her in a bathtub about to kill herself because women do that? Not entirely the case. Yeah. Now, I do want to read some tweets that you get, because this belies a larger issue, which is Twitter. I'm making a rainbow with my hands.
Yeah.
to Twitter allows you 140 characters. 140 characters, it's good to keep what you want to do short. As Russell and I, both writers, can attest, it's good to keep it shorter than longer. If you can tell the same story in fewer words with... unless you're J.R.R. Tolkien, it's a good thing. Unless it is a good thing to tell the same story in fewer words. In that way, Twitter is great. You don't get the Facebook status updates that, you know, you see more here. I'm not going to read it. I'm not clicking more here. Fuck you and your more here. Say what you need to say in the amount that is allotted by Facebook, or I'm not interested.
You read the headline, you skip down to the comments, and you say the first thing that comes to your mind.
Right, which is...
without bothering to read the rest of the article.
Right, you read the headline, and the headline on the CBC News page that I will link in the podcast page is DC Comics call for naked suicidal Harley Quinn image angers fans. That's the headline. That would fit really nicely on Twitter. Here are some of the replies to that. Official DC Comic talent search requires entrance to draw a panel of Harley Quinn naked in a bathtub about to commit suicide. Sickening. And wants you to draw her naked and committing suicide. It's just people... suicide is cute, says DC Comics. Conducting a talent search wherein you sexualize suicide is the opposite of good. Are we surprised? They're doing it like it's funny. September is Suicide Prevention Month. Should your talent search project really be drawing Harley Quinn committing suicide?
God, is it really?
Siri, that's what the guy says. It's also...
I feel like we just got out of Suicide Prevention Month for some reason. Anyway.
Competing during suicide. Yeah. Serious, not sexy.
Yeah. So, here are the important facts.
Yes.
First off, that is technically true.
Yes.
That,
technically true, which if you were...
They are asked... Yeah. Which, if you were...
the best kind of true, but not really.
The
best kind of true.
Yeah. If you were looking for the fact is that the DC Comics is asking for artists to draw something to submit as a way to get their foot in the door. And what they draw is going to be published. And it involves a naked Harley about to commit suicide or looking like she is about to commit suicide in a bathtub. Those things are all true. Right. Here's the Paul Harvey rest of the story.
Yeah.
The Paul Harvey rest of the story is that the people who are submitting art were given a sample script, a script page of what the writers of Harley Quinn Zero are looking for.
Harley Quinn number zero.
Panel one. Harley is on top of a building holding a large detached cell phone tower in her hands as lightning is striking just above everywhere, about everywhere except her tower. She's looking at us like she cannot believe what she is doing, beside herself, not happy. Panel two. Harley sitting on an alligator pond on a little island with a suit of raw chicken on, rolling her eyes like, once again, she can't believe where she's found herself. We see the alligators ignoring her. Panel 3. Harley is sitting in an open whale mouth, tickling the inside of the whale's mouth with a feather. She is ecstatic and happy, like this is the most fun ever. Panel 4. Harley sitting naked in a bathtub with toasters, blow dryers, blenders, appliances all dangling above the bathtub, and she has a cord that will release them all. We are watching the moment before the inevitable death. Her expression is one of, oh well, guess that's it for me. And she has resigned herself to the moment that is going to happen. So, that is the full script which has been given on DC Comics' webpage for artists to write from. And I'd say that it is typical in terms of the way and style that it's written, of a script.
Yes, and of a Harley Quinn sort of, because she's very madcap and yada yada.
Yeah, yeah. Now, here are some important notes to think about when you're looking at this. They're looking for artists.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for artists to draw stuff, and they want to see their range. We've been given a set of panels for one page.
Right, page 15. All... So it's an actual page,
yes,
from Harley Quinn number zero. This, yep, is the page that will eventually, probably not now, they'll likely change that fourth panel. They'll probably change it.
They may. They likely will.
Page 15, they'll come up with something else.
It's an actual page
from the comic book. Yeah.
Page 15, four panels, panel 1 through 4. So the thing is that they're pretty active in terms of what is in them, what is happening.
And they're different,
and they require everything to be shown through the art. There is no text.
Mm-hmm.
There are no text bubbles. There's no mention of anything. You know, whether they go back and add anything later, I don't think they are because of the way this is written.
Right.
There's no, you know, they don't have to worry about any of that. So for a page to be given, you know, to artists to draw just to see what they have, this is a good example of something that would do that, because everything has to be expressed through the art. There's a lot of stuff going on that's different, and, you know, you don't have to worry about things like, well, how big do I have to make certain things to make room for the, you know, the typists or the whatever.
Right.
You know, you don't have to worry about any of that. But that last panel, and you kind of get the sense that what's going on is, for some reason, you know, she's not, She's been trying to kill herself, and it's not going so well.
Right. That was something I wanted to point out, that if you look at all the other ones, it's clear that for some reason she is looking to die. Now, this being a Harley Quinn book, it is likely some comedic reason. Is death funny? No.
Some
death
really, is really not horrible funny. Comedic reasons. Because Harley is absolutely...
It's black comedy. Sometimes when people die, it's funny. And if you enjoy, you know,
there's a reason the Darwin Awards exist.
Right. Right.
So anyway, yeah. And that last panel is the one that, you know, people read it. They get to that part. And when they talk about why this is upsetting, and this is upsetting, I mean, this is the kind of thing that people put trigger warnings on stuff for. And, you know, it is upsetting. And to describe it in that way, you know, you have 144 characters, you have a headline, you have a tease if you're writing, you know, TV, you've got 10 seconds or less to draw people in, that's what you're going to say. And to an extent, when you're teasing it and doing that, you're going to be as shocking as possible because A, it reflects how much it shocked you, possibly.
Uh-huh.
B, you know it will in turn shock other people.
Right.
And that gets people to click your link. It gets people to, you know, sit in the seat. It gets people to listen to what it is that you're doing. So that's the whole story. we don't get the rest of what the comic is about. No, but it could be
anything.
Yeah.
It could be, and likely is anything. It's not going, it's a Harley Quinn book. It's not going to be serious. It's going to be dark comedy, madcap, blah, blah, blah. You know, sometimes death is used to be funny. It's been used to be funny in a dark, twisted sort of way since the dawn of things being funny. I mean, if you've ever made a Michael Jackson joke, you're guilty of it as anybody else. If you've ever made an Anna Nicole Smith joke, you're as guilty of it as anybody else. Now, Ariel Castro just killed himself, and there have been plenty of jokes floating around about that, and that guy is dead. Hey, you know what? That's a good thing, because fuck that guy. But still, sometimes...
Now, here's the important thing. The really important thing is that nothing that I have said, and I'm pretty sure that nothing that you have said, was intended to be any kind of exoneration of any of the content or the actions taken. DC absolutely has the right to make this kind of comic, to call for people, and to put this up there as a sample of writing. And all the reasons I listed earlier are probably reasons that they have.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean it was the right decision.
No.
That doesn't necessarily, and that doesn't mean that people don't have the right to be angry and to call them out on
but
it.
Be so angry at the right stuff.
Yeah, get all the details, and especially as journalists, we implore you, just know the facts. Get involved. Read the stuff beyond just the headline before you read before retweeting, before tweeting about it, before get all the facts, because that's all we
facts
ask.
Facts are important.
Yeah.
Regardless, as much fun as it is, and I know I'm guilty of it as everyone else does, that's within the sound of my voice, of bitching about what people do and saying that person is an idiot and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
As now, much fun as that is, you need to be informed.
Now, the thing is, all of these scenes, this is where I think some of the real, you know, kind of stuff comes in.
Mm.
All of these scenes can be seen as kind of madcap. That last scene is getting a little
close to home.
To a place, to a place that is, you know, it's not, and if I have to say this again, you know, we're talking about potential, you know, images of people committing, attempting to commit suicide in some way, so keep that in mind. It's not someone, you know, drawing marks on their wrist. It's not, you know, or even going further than that, you know, but it is something that people have done, and it has been depicted in many other types and forms of media.
Yes.
Let's go to Mel Gibson and,
In the movie Elizabethtown, while Russell speaks of the movie, in the movie Elizabethtown, which is a terrible movie, never watch it, at the very beginning, you see Orlando Bloom's character duct taping a steak knife, I shit you not, I'm not making this up, duct taping a steak knife to the handles of an exercise machine, the handles that kind of go back and forth, with the thought that he's going to turn his legs and push the handle back and shove it into his chest. No one picketed the movie Elizabethtown.
Probably because no one really watched it.
It was a terrible, terrible movie.
Yeah.
But this is being thrown, having an appliance thrown into a tub to kill somebody has been you see it in TV, you see it in movies. That's why they went for it.
Yeah, but it stands out from the other three panels, which are holding a cell phone tower on top of a building in a lightning storm, which is pretty. That's kind of out there.
Right.
Harley in an alligator pond with a suit of raw chicken on, and the alligators are ignoring her.
Right.
That's pretty far out there. Standing in an open whale mouth, absolutely out there. You know, I mean, if you watch the documentary about trainers getting killed at SeaWorld,
Blackfish,
that might upset you.
Yeah. I want to see that movie and no one will play it. Sorry. I just really want to see Blackfish.
And see, that's something that, you know, you might watch that and then you might read this and be like, oh, that's the most horrible thing
ever. Yeah, that's terrible. That's not something you should make fun of. Whales actually kill people because they're mentally handicapped from being put into enclosed. See, you could get pissed off more about that than the fourth panel. Though, the fourth panel is the most realistic, even though it's not still all that realistic because of the way it's depicted. I see some sort of Rube Goldberg machine above her that she's rigged up because it's Harley Quinn, so it's not going to be you know. But regardless,
but still, it makes light of an actual scenario and situation that is more likely to occur. And yes. You know, I don't have statistics for me, obviously, but in people's minds, I would argue more likely to occur than getting inside a whale's mouth. And you know,
it's also important. I think one thing that really set people's ire off was the fact that she's naked. She's naked because she's in a bathtub and there's water in the bathtub.
And because it also gives the artist a chance
to draw her. Right. Well, and to draw. Let's just be honest about comic books for just a minute. You get a lot of female characters in compromising positions because in the past and currently a lot of males who like that sort of thing read those comics, and that's something that it is thought to entice a male to buy the comic. Go look, just walk down this is what happens. This is not necessarily good, but it is what happens. Go walk down the aisle at your local entertainment superstore and look at the comics. 9 out of 10 of them are going to have a very stylistically drawn, beautiful woman in some sort of tight or not their clothing. It's the way it works. So if you're looking for someone to draw that, you're going to want to give them an opportunity to draw a character, at least draw skin, shoulders, something like that.
Yeah, so that they can see the artist and how they handle drawing that kind of, you know, skin, flesh tones.
Right.
So, yeah, all of this, I will say this, reading this as an editor or as, you know, someone trying to pick something that I want to do a talent call on, this is the kind of page that I would want to use.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of content, she's trying to commit suicide in comedic ways. One of them is a little closer than the others, but, you know, you get the overall sense of what they're going for the entire thing. And so it all depends on which artist they choose. Now, some of the things that are going to be turned in, they're going to look at and they're going to go, God, we really wish that we hadn't have asked for this. Because here's the thing. The people who have to pick through these are going to have to look at hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of these submissions. And frankly, I hope they don't see the light of day, because just having spent,
they undoubtedly
10 minutes on DeviantArt.
Yeah.
DeviantArt has some great artists. DeviantArt has some amazing people. It has some really, really, really questionable materials that will likely be submitted for this that I hope never sees the light of day.
Right.
But someone has to look at again and again and again and again and again, and they have to look at these things over and over and over and over. So it's going to suck for that person, and I hope that they understand. We feel for you in advance.
Now, if you still feel like this is a bad thing, if you feel like it's a bad thing that what they're doing, I would implore you to be wrong, to be mad at the right thing. If you want to have an argument about the how serious suicide is taken in mass media, specifically comics, that's a good argument to have. If you want to have a conversation about sexualizing female characters in comics, that's a great argument to have that we've had multiple times on this podcast. And if you go back and listen to it, neither Russell nor I are apologists for sexualizing comic characters in any way, shape, or form. I understand the reason behind it. Russell obviously does too, but at the same time, that doesn't make it a good thing. Be mad at the right stuff, because think about it this way. Had this never been discovered, or had they chosen another page, would this have ever had a blip on anybody's radar? This book comes out, this page is in it, with these four panels, would anyone have said anything about it?
Let's replace that last panel then. Let's say that instead of, you know, Harley in the bathtub with the instruments, which is a very Clue-like ending, let's say Harley tied to some train tracks and a train is stopping so that people can get off the train five feet away from her. She's looking at it and going, oh, come on!
Right.
You know?
Would anyone have said anything?
Right, because it's all about... Or had they changed the panel? it's all about how out there the comic goes, which takes us away from the realist point.
Right.
The realism.
Like RoboCop.
Or how close to it you get.
Exactly.
Where on that spectrum it falls. And I think that every time that they go out and they depict someone attempting to commit suicide comedically, people are going to be upset. People should be upset. Mm-hmm. It is a conversation that should occur.
Yes.
I think this in particular, I don't know. I think it'll get printed. I think it'll continue to go on.
I think they may change the fourth panel only because of all the people that have complained about it. I still think, had this never been discovered, and had this gone to print, it would have gone to print with absolutely no changes. It would have hit the newsstand. People who read Harley Quinn would have read it, and no one would have said anything about it. Because in the larger arc of the story, it makes sense. She's probably, you know, she's either thinking about, or it's like Looney Tunes. You see, how many times do you see the coyote fall off the cliff? No one ever says, well, that's animal cruelty. The coyote
or
is...
Or like the old... Well, I'm sure PETA does. Or like well, the...
PETA doesn't
They boycotted Pokemon.
I know.
They made their own Pokemon game. Yeah. Which, frankly, you know, they could have tweaked a couple things on the comments, and I probably would have been happier. That's the thing. You know, how many times do we have a goodbye cruel world moment with cartoon characters?
Right.
And because it's the situation that it's in,
right,
we are able to see that through a different lens.
Right. And it's all about the lens. This is a non-story. It just is. This is a non-story. You shouldn't necessarily be really pissed off about it. It's part of what happens in comic books. It is acceptable in our culture. We can joke about things like this. Yes, we can. In the proper context, it happens all the time. And the fact that no one, there's no outcry. Let me put it this way. Harley Quinn is not on the nose of a jet about to hit a skyscraper. Why? Because anytime anything approaches that subject, they're smacked down. It is not ever, except for very, you know, unmainstream, it's never acceptable. It would not be acceptable because to culture it is not acceptable. If it bothers you that this is out there, have that discussion. Really look for examples and have that discussion and say, listen, though there may be unintended consequences from this. Someone might see this and say, well, that's a good way to go because they're mentally ill and they're going to kill themselves. And it's not something we should joke about. As a people, we joke about things we shouldn't joke about all the time. It's not fair to pin it on DC based on a misreading of what's going on.
But the counterpoint to that argument that I want to take is it the right material to very publicly put out as a way to draw in new artists versus editorial on the other end, you know, picking these writers, picking these artists, knowing what their style is, what they are capable of, what kind of material they normally do, and then greenlighting material that comes out of both of those ends. Because art is easily... especially in this circumstance, art is a very, very, very important determinant of how certain things that occur in comics can be received. And giving it to the public and using it as a publicity stunt, which, come on, this really is. It's partly a publicity stunt. When you do these open kinds of calls,
well, that's is part it of though? The reason you do it. I didn't even know they did open calls like this.
It can't not be.
Well,
I'm saying it can't not be.
Here. Okay, let me tell you a story that happened to me. I had to create I work in promos. I'm going to leave out all the names to protect the innocent because everyone in this story is innocent. Myself included. I had to create a promo. We were going to send our weather guy out and about, and I was going to, and we weren't going to tell anybody where he was going to go. He was just going to be there. And I created a promo that was basically, where's the weather guy? Where is he? I don't know where he is. I don't know. Do you know? I don't know. On the promo, I made a poster that, to me, I'm thinking it's like a missing dog poster. So I put missing at the top, and I put his face on it. And it's, oh, our weather guy's missing. Help us find him by watching the news. No problem. When I did it, I didn't think twice. Didn't think twice about it. I mean, it's just,
I know exactly what the ending of this is, just, and I know who's involved, and I know, oh boy.
It just didn't, yeah. Someone involved in a in an organization that deals with missing children sent an email and was incensed that we were making light of missing people. Now,
yeah, and this someone and this organization.
Well, I don't want to get into that.
No, I'm not at all. I'm just
going to
say
an organization that more I respect.
Yes, and are very, very, very visible.
And are very visible and are extremely sympathetic. I respect all the people involved in this, and the end at the end of the day, I changed it. I changed missing to wanted, in case you were curious as to how I changed it. I changed missing to wanted. Now, again, was I in the wrong for doing it to begin with? I don't think so. Again, missing dog posters happen all the time. You don't go around ripping down missing dog posters. However, for a certain audience, it was considered this one individual person considered it in poor taste.
And there's also a set of kind of Macy's been studying this in history over at LSU, and it's part of a PhD program for theater. There's part of I think it's a debate or a theory or, you know, just a stance that once the creative work has left the creator's hands, that creator's intentions, original designs, any of that, absolutely no longer have any bearing on the work. It's all in how the people
it's all
that consume
it is,
can perceive it.
Received. And yeah. I agree with that. That being said, I still changed it because it wasn't a problem to change it. And but I guess what I'm trying to illustrate here is I had the best of intentions. To 99% of people, 99.9% of people, it would not have been an issue. They would have looked at it, thought, like I did, missing dog poster. Oh, that's or that it, I mean, it wasn't goofy, it wasn't funny. I still don't think I was in the wrong with it. I gladly changed it because the last thing I want to do is offend somebody. Shock, I know, calm down. The last thing I want to do is offend somebody. But at the same time, it did. And I clearly had no ill feelings. That's the way I feel with this Harley Quinn thing, which is why I disagree with you that it was a way to drum up publicity. I think they likely do these sort of artist casting calls a lot. Maybe this one's slightly different, but they do these artist casting calls quite a bit. And someone happened to stumble upon it, probably. And this is conjecture. Probably looking around for stuff with the whole Batwoman gay marriage thing. They were hunting around. They find this, and it snowballs from there. They see this one panel and this one thing at the very end that all of the people who put it together, none of them thought. Now, are people going to get really pissed off? Like it when I was creating that promo, that thought never came to my mind. I never came to my mind. I tell you what, now I would never do it again.
Right.
Something completely different. Yeah. Again,
you
not
were talking
because
about
I think
it.
I was wrong.
No. You just had a different frame of reference
exactly.
And a different set of experiences. Because I thought
about
the moment that you started talking about it, I was like, oh, I know exactly what happened.
Right. And I'd never,
like,
without even, never told you that story before.
No. I wasn't there, but I know. Yeah, because I have a different set of experiences. I have done stories with those people.
Right.
To be frank,
I know all of the people involved very well. I've had lunch with them. We're good friends.
Yeah.
It just didn't come up. That just didn't go to my. And you could make the argument that they were being overly sensitive. Perhaps
but,
they were.
Yeah,
I'm not
but.
Going to make that argument because it's not a huge deal for me to change it. Nor will I ever do another comedic missing poster again. Because if it's going to offend somebody, I don't want to do it. That's not what
I do. Ultimately, changing it to wanted, you had the exact same effect.
Right. It was just a choice that I made. And it's better to be wanted than missing, apparently.
And there's a thing about... there are people out there who will say, well, that's a violation of your freedom of speech. And the reality is that technically, no, it is not.
Well,
because, well, here's the thing. We have the right to say what we want and to express ourselves mm-hmm. the way we want. And no laws can be made that infringe upon that.
Right.
We still have to face the consequences.
You are 100% right.
Of the choices of what we say, where we say it, when we say it, how we say it. There's a famous bit in or semi-famous, I say. There's a bit in The Complete History of America, Abridged, which is a fantastic play, mm-hmm. where they're talking about freedom of speech. And, you know, they're talking about, well, you can't just, you know, this is on stage in a theater. They're saying you just can't, you know, yell fire in a crowded theater. That would be bad. I mean, that would cause panic. It would, mm-hmm. you know, and so you could potentially face consequences because of that.
Right.
You know, it's not that you said, it's not because of what you said. It's because
exactly
you caused a panic. And then there's like, well, what if I set fire to this American flag? People would, no, you can't do that. See, that's infringing upon my freedom of speech. No, it's because it's a fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that we're talking about.
And it was not necessarily, it wasn't infringing on my creative, on my freedom of speech, because no one forced me to do it. Now, my boss might have eventually forced me to do it had I stuck to my guns and said, I'm but not going to change it. He didn't.
But he owns the business. He pays, right. or at least he, you know, writes the paychecks,
right.
and is responsible for stuff right. that comes out. If you know, they have the freedom to put that out. Mm-hmm. Louis C.K. has the freedom to go on stage and talk about what he wants to talk about in his comedy acts. Mm-hmm. Ditto for, you know, late night talk show hosts, whatever. Right. But the people who watch them don't have any obligation to stick around and listen.
No.
And if they say stuff that they don't like, they'll leave.
Right.
And as they leave, there will not be any money coming in. And for the people that work for them, you know, what good is that if, you know, you're working for someone who says whatever they want to and has the freedom to say whatever they want to, but isn't making any money doing so?
Right. It gets to the bottom line. And that person loses his audience and he loses his impact.
And he loses his impact and he loses the paycheck.
Which is what you do. Which is why if this is something that you don't – which is why you shouldn't support things you don't support.
Yeah.
A lot of the times people do. They support things they don't support and then they get them and then they gripe about them. Which
I will,
you gripe with your dollars.
Yeah, I will still go eat at Chick-fil-A occasionally.
Yes, I eat at Chick-fil-A because not all Chick-fil-A's are owned by that guy.
No, despite vehemently, you know, opposing that guy and the stuff that he supports, I will still go buy Chick-fil-A because I know the people that work there need the money.
Yep.
And because I have a weakness for Polynesian sauce.
Polynesian sauce is damn good.
It's so damn good.
I bet a gay person invented Polynesian sauce. It's good, and it's Polynesian. Because if you think Chick-fil-A, nothing about that says Polynesian. I'm just saying.
Really? No, it does not.
No, see?
Yeah, I think nothing about that says Polynesian.
I think I have a...
Although we have Raising Cane's down here, which is a good substitute. And usually I get there first.
So, now that we've gotten into constitutional law, it's probably a good idea to wrap the podcast up. As always, our music is Improv featuring Esset. Check them out on uhort.no. Check us out on Twitter. We are at GIR Podcast. Tweet at us anything you want. Even though it's only 140 characters, we may not get the whole story. We will research it. You can also shoot us an email to girpodcast@gmail.com. For Russell, this is Jeremy. Thanks for listening.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.